Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is Evan Basilik, and I am here with Cynthia and Kale. I'm recording this on Wednesday, December 2nd, and this is episode number 357, Verifiable Identity with Blockchain. Our special guest, Ankur Patel, will sort of join us shortly, but for now, let's go ahead and get into the news. Cynthia, I think you put some news in.
Yep, I did. I had one on the public preview for intelligent ingestion from Events Hub as a source with Azure Data Explorer. I can't talk today. And what that means is that now I think Events Hub has been a source for Azure Data Explorer for a while, but now with ADX ingestion, what the intelligence helps you is that it will actually start offering a couple of different schemas that they recommend with the data you ingest.
Also, it looks at your data and says, this is how you should ingest it based on the data structure.
Yep. Nice. So they look at like some schema and some mapping, and then they say like, why don't you do this?
Yeah, that's cool. Excellent. Okay. Anything else?
That's all for me.
Okay. Sounds a bit like Clippy. Looks like you're trying to ingest some data. Can I help you with that?
the sad part is there's probably
Clippy on Azure.
I don't know, but I suspect there's people in our audience that are going, Clippy? Who's Clippy? Just leave that as homework for everybody in the audience. Right? Okay, cool. Well, let's get over to our special guest at this point. Ankur, if you could introduce yourself and let us know what you do for Microsoft.
My name is Ankur Patel. I'm a program manager on the identity team. My job is to help figure out how we grow our identity business. Though I fear now that we have mentioned Clippy, it's going to get more comments and engagement than anything I'm about to say for the rest of the time that we talk. But the mystery continues. So my role is to help figure out how we grow identity business. Identity, as you may know, for Microsoft is consumer, which is how you do Xbox, HoloLens, Windows, Outlook, anything in our personal lives. And then there is enterprise identity, which is Azure Active Directory. That's used by 20.5 million businesses around the world. A lot of Fortune 500 runs on it. And it's the control plane.
They are the same underlying infrastructure these days, right?
More of it together. Yes. Okay. The places where they diverge are on things like Microsoft as a company is a customer of such a substrate. So they get to make their own policy choices on top of it on things like GDPR compliance and others. But yeah, we're trying to bring more and more of the user onboarding flows and authentication authorization to be the same fabric. Yeah. Things like passwordless, for example, the same thing powers of those worlds.
Nice. Okay. So yeah, so we I had reached out. I saw a demo that somebody gave on this verifiable identity thing. And by the way, just sharing for our audience who knows, Kale's Mr. Blockchain here. So when we had this verifiable identity and blockchain got mentioned in this context, I knew we had to get Ankur on. But what is verifiable identity before we even get to the blockchain aspects?
So let's actually break those things apart, because first, let's start with what is identity before we make it verifiable. I'll contend that we have identity in our everyday lives. People know us as who we are. That's how we are represented. It's what do we stand for and how the community or the tribe recognizes you. In the digital world, we are represented by our accounts. I would go so far to say we don't have a digital identity because our accounts are peanut buttered all over the internet. And the only people who can stitch it together are people like Equifax or one of those agencies who collects all this data together. And that's the closest semblance to our digital identity. So if anything, we're missing our own digital identity. And then if you had such a digital identity, then we get to talk about what are the verifiable aspects of it. So the community has been doing work in open standards around verifiable credentials. It's an emergent standard, and it's an open standard, which allows us to basically give signed attestations to each other, or a company can give to us that says, I can travel, I can drive a car, I work at Microsoft, etc. So a series of verifiable credentials put together make up our identity. Kale, you were trying to say something.
Yeah, one second there, just for our listeners. They might not know what an attestation is.
Sure, that's a good call. Attestation is an endorsement, right? Which says, Kale believes I know something about verifiable credentials, for example, is an attestation from him. Or that these guys invited me to talk to you guys and say that I work at Microsoft are forms of attestations. More common ones are verified employment, verified education, like our diplomas and our degrees, our driver's licenses, I can drive a car.
This is what you're talking about is sort of the digital equivalent of, if you go to college and you're applying for college, you need to send your transcript.
Yeah.
You can't send it.
That's right.
It has to come from, the high school that you graduated or whatever, because that's the only way they can sort of be sure that it's real. Right.
That's right.
This is sort of the digital equivalent of that.
That's right. Now, there's something very important that you brought up in that, which is the separation of concern between the school is the only one who can say what my transcript is.
Right.
However, I should be responsible for sharing with whom I want when I want it. I don't want my school to just send it out randomly on the internet to anyone. Right. So an example of this would be, did we take a quiz and want to share our data for taking some random quiz on the internet, or do we want to share it for some political campaign?
Gotcha.
That's a choice I get to make.
So you control where it goes, even though they're sort of the people that attest to it, you still control.
That's right. And so this verifiability actually has three different dimensions, if you will. One is one that says, who is the issuer of this attestation, such as your university or your employer saying, you work here, you went to school here, et cetera. Who can present it? So if I want to go present this on LinkedIn, I should be the one who should be responsible for presenting it to say, and it's true I actually work here, and it's true that I actually went to that school, as opposed to you randomly associating me with some group, for example. And then finally, someone like a LinkedIn or an application is responsible for verifying these facts to say, and I trust these things. I verified that only Ankur could have presented this, and only Microsoft could have said he worked at Microsoft, for example. So that's what we're trying to build in this new technology, is a common, familiar, technical way for us to take these analog things we've been used to doing forever, like the transcript thing, but do it in the digital world.
But then in this digital world, who decides who we want to trust? Because then, like, the school is very arbitrary, because we trust that the school will be honest about whatever grade I got in high school. Yeah. But in the digital world, there's so many people that claim they know who you are and what you're doing.
Right. Which is where I think what you bring up is super. We've so far relied on third-party proxies to say, hey, so long as this credit score thing says this is true, it must be true. And we know those systems are also compromisable as a result of all the data breaches that we've known. So if anything, what we want to do is make it easy for you as a service provider, because ultimately you are holding the risk. You get to choose who you want to trust. And if I want your service, I must provide that burden of proof. So for example, if you want to go access a lounge at an airport, someday when we'll all go back to traveling again, you would then say, to come in here, you must provide your boarding pass and some credit card, because it's a platinum lounge or whatever it might be. They are choosing who they want to trust. It is no different than if you want to get a preferred rate at a car rental company or a restaurant reservation or anything else. But today, those worlds are very few that you can set up such relationships with. You can't ask for, let's say you're a bookstore. You want to give a discount to a student from any university in the world. How would you do that? You couldn't. And so we do the least common denominator, which says round trip and email to some email account. And if that works, then you're a student. As opposed to, imagine if you could ask for a student to say, present to me a verifiable credential signed by your university. I'll go find them somehow. And therefore, I will know you are a student. So as a bookstore, you just want to write a rule that says, I do business with any bookstore or any university around the world. That's what we're trying to enable as the Rails. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, totally. One thing, Ankur, maybe you could talk. Oh, sorry, Cynthia.
Sorry. I'm just really curious, like, why, how do people agree on one thing?
You don't have to. The world doesn't have to agree. What has to be agreed upon, excuse me, is between the service provider and the subject. If I want to buy a book from your bookstore, I need to agree to whatever you need in order for me to buy a bookstore from you, a book from you. So it's actually pairwise, right? And that's how the world works. The world doesn't work on, like, every flower shop doesn't have the same protocol as every other flower shop on the planet. So if anything, this is about getting the technology out of the way, let you express these business rules higher up in the stack, and give you a common set of technology using which you can request and verify credentials. So we're actually trying to dumb this thing down a lot. It's hard making things simpler and dumber. Sorry. Kale, you had your hand up.
Yeah, yeah. I just had maybe something you could talk about, because it's confused me a little bit.
Yeah.
Is when you say, like, I own my data. So for instance, I have an identity that's Kale, yeah, right? And that's Kale in the world. But, like, I work for Microsoft, but Microsoft doesn't own me, right?
Yeah.
Kale owns me, right? But Microsoft does own some data
we do,
about me.
We own you. Sorry, man. We own you.
But Microsoft does own some attributes about me. Hey, I work in this group, and this is how long I've been at the company and all that. So in that case, like, Microsoft does have some, like, data about me, yeah, that maybe they hold, right? That I don't get the right to mess with.
It's totally true. And in fact, I think that's one of those misnomers in this. When we talk about ownership, people treat it very, you know, all encompassing and inclusive. So then we need some precision in that language that you are striving for, which is, I as a subject own whom I want to disclose that relationship to. That's the only thing I really have control over. And then saying, yeah, it's true. These are facts about me. However, there's a whole bunch of people who can go and say things about me. I can't stop them. They own those assertions. I'm a good neighbor or not, my neighbors own that. I don't get to do anything about it, right? And I work for Microsoft. Of course, Microsoft owns that attestation, and they can rescind that anytime they want, at will employment, both ways. So those things are true. However, our association that I am willing to tell you on LinkedIn that I work on Microsoft is really mine. Microsoft doesn't go off and say all 100,000 people that work at Microsoft on LinkedIn unilaterally. They can't, right? Because that's mine to disclose, if you will. So it's about this ownership over who gets a right to say what is what this really comes down to. And then how do we give you tools by which you can do verification of such claims? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Thanks.
So the other thing that struck me is listening to you talk, Ankur. So, you know, this is a super distributed problem,
yeah,
right? There's all these different flower shops, all the different bookstores, you know,
yeah,
me, Cynthia, you, right? Yeah. There's all these different pieces. And you mentioned earlier talking about standards. This is not, Microsoft obviously has some implementation of this that we're doing.
Correct.
But this is a standard. This is something we're trying to, with other companies, trying to create so that,
yeah,
anybody could implement it and then lots of people could leverage it.
You're exactly right, because it goes to this core thing, which is, if we want to enable people to own and control their own identity, including ourselves, then it can't be based on some proprietary technology from one company.
Right.
It needs to transcend and be durable and lasting beyond one company being around or having policies that allow me to take a dependency on it. Right. And so it is based on these open standards that are being developed in Decentralized Identity Foundation. It's at identity.foundation is their website. And in W3C, where other internet standards are ratified. So verifiable credentials came out of that. Decentralized identifiers, which is a key technology component in this stack, comes out of there. And Microsoft is doing one implementation of this technology. There are many others in the ecosystem. In fact, there are more than 90 companies that are part of Decentralized Identity Foundation today, and it's growing very quickly. And a lot of them are well-known brand names.
Cool. Yeah, so this is definitely a multilateral, you know, thing at that point. Is that you talked about it has to go, I forget exactly how you phrase it, like past, you know, it has to exist after the company,
yeah,
know, maybe dozen or whatever. Is that where the blockchain comes in? Because that sounds like a pretty classic blockchain-esque,
yeah,
scenario.
That's right. You should specifically think about it, at least in our opinion, blockchain has lots of utility. But for our need, what we use it for is keeping track of time. Because in all of these conversations, what's really important is who said what about whom. Right. And that who is established based on an identifier, and an identifier is only meaningful in time and space. So like this identifier is under control with Evan or with Cynthia or with Kale, and they represent you for that conversation, such as your Facebook ID or your Google ID. How do we know who had control over something and specifically when? So when we talk about cryptocurrency, for example, the key thing is like, who is holding this asset right now? Because it's a fungible thing. So we want to make sure only one person has it and doesn't do double spend and things like that.
Well, and yesterday it could have been somebody different than
that's
today.
Right.
That's where the now and comes in.
How do we keep it moving, right? So this blockchain is this thing that says Microsoft, some identifier, endorsed or signed this claim that Ankur or some other identifier worked here, for example. And we can memorialize that if we choose to. And then forever and ever, it can be known that I used to work there at that moment in time. And then some point in time, that employment ended. Maybe it's because of this interview. But all of those things, it goes to this idea that we've talked about on like right to be forgotten and things like that, where sometimes it's okay because the citizen is exercising the right. And then there are other times where because of a security breach or a policy change, we changed our mind. And that's not cool when it comes to people's identity, right? And so when accounts get disappeared, that's a real problem because of security or a policy change. And we don't believe we should have that kind of power as a technology provider. So those are some of the more deeper implications of this technology set that we are trying to address. We have a long way to go to get to such big changes, but these are some of the basic building blocks that we are building to attempt helping with.
Given that we talk about blockchain, does that mean anything that's ever created will never be erased?
Yes and no. So what is on the blockchain is the question we should ask first. So it is true that one of the properties of a distributed ledger system is persistence. It's durable. Once written, it shall be so. So it would not be good to write down that Ankur Patel as the guy who received this thing, because what happens if I change my name or I got married or whatever the social custom might be? How do we change that again? So what should be written is that some identifier interacted with some other identifier. Or for example, let's take my COVID-19 test result. We shouldn't write down that I got tested positive or negative, or I got vaccine and I'm healthy or not, to be durably present, because we know these things change over time. So what we should write down, though, is that test took place at this point in time. I was between these two identifiers. So the only thing in our system, our implementation, we use a distributed ledger for is writing down when something of importance takes place between two identifiers, but not what it is about. What it is about sits in those databases, as Kale was describing, like my actual employment history is in some database in Microsoft. It's not sitting on blockchain, right? It would not be good.
See, Kale, not good, blockchain. See?
No, it's the right tool at the right time, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think all of these, that's the most important bit, is we have to think through the right use of a given technology. And so we strongly believe that blockchains and DLT systems, distributed ledger systems, can act as this common fabric, a utility that is available to the world to store shared truth, such as timestamps of important things. So everybody has equal access to it. So if anything in this system, there's this technology called Universal Resolver, which is a client-side library, which is, think of it as a DNS lookup for verifiable credentials and DIDs. So what you pass into it is a DID, a decentralized identifier, or a cryptographic key. And you say, who has this key? So you can perform authentication of that request. So Universal Resolver helps you route and find these identifiers. Versus today, we rely
really
on
where, it just struck me. You don't know where.
That's right.
Great. Somebody told me, you know, I've got Cynthia's transcript. I don't really know. Like she got it to me, but I don't really know where it came from.
Right. So how do we route that request to Cynthia's phone so she can do her biometric gesture or whatever to sign that transaction? So we use blockchain for that, right? To write identifiers, and then Universal Resolver acts as a directory lookup, basically. Versus today, if you wanted to get in touch with someone on Facebook, you have to rely on a Facebook service and hope Facebook lets you talk to Cynthia. In this world, two people can resolve and talk to each other directly using these client-side technologies and blockchain as a common utility in the middle. Does that make sense?
It does. No, that makes perfect sense. My head just got blown too as soon as that sunk in. So I probably had the same look on my face.
So this gives you a much larger scale. So this allows us to give an identifier for everyone and everything in the world, allow them to find each other and connect with each other directly in a secure way, in a verifiable way, be able to, going back to Cynthia's original question, like, how do I know who to trust? You get to decide. So what if you could address everyone in the world? How might you go do verification at scale? So those are the kinds of problems that verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers can help us with.
You said everyone and everything. How does this work on a thing?
So things are owned and operated by people, as far as we know. They are not sentient yet. Yes. I would think that there would be a delegation to a phone, for example. And that phone has an identifier as well. And it is owned and operated by someone or some organization. So all of these things are same pattern problem from an identity stack perspective, right? So to kind of bring the whole discussion to a close, here's a concrete example that we can look to. Did you guys go open a bank account or a loan or anything recently, right?
Yeah.
You would be asked to kind of take a picture of your driver's license and give permission to look up your social security number and all these things. So some databases says these things were true or not true. The next step in it, however, would be who sent this driver's license? I would love to take a selfie of you, match your photo to the picture in the document, so I know that the person who presented the document is indeed the person that I'm interacting with. So when we go do things like get a job in the middle of COVID when nobody's seeing each other in person, that's a much better way. Or you want to do password recovery. Today we do kind of silly security questions, for example, or SMS texts, and we know issues with those things, systems. Wouldn't it be better if you had a durable identifier document like a driver's license and a selfie? Those are your factors that you will always have. And we can use that to do recovery or activation of our services with various providers. No more usernames, no more passwords, and it's securely under my control. No one else has those artifacts, right? Even if you stole my driver's license, you don't have my face to match with it, for example. It still gives me the privacy and control because I am the one who's choosing where these things can be used and how it could be used.
Yeah, makes total sense. I would love. I am a studious user of a password management system because I just gave up. You just can't. You can't do it. And so a passwordless world, where you talk about using this identity in this fashion would be phenomenal.
The final kicker I'll leave you with is no more CAPTCHAs, right? Like, I'm sick and tired of seeing crosswalks and traffic lights and boats and bumpers and whatever else they make you count. And so if you can just present this verifiable credential that says, I'm not a bot, you don't need to know anything else, just I'm not a bot. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Right. So those are the kinds of scenarios we're hoping. We can start with something very mundane, with just not a bot, and then someday graduate to some of these higher value scenarios.
Plus, we can build in that the first time it comes back and says, I am a bot, we have to throw an alarm somewhere, right?
That's true. But that's just a switch in attribute for us.
Then. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So Ankur, I'm interested for our listeners. You talked a lot about like kind of theory, like about why this is important and kind of the constructs of it. What can people do today to like start experiencing this or seeing some of the early stuff that's coming with this? We could definitely drop some links in the show notes, but maybe some of the things you could share.
So a key place, if you're interested in this work, is at Decentralized Identity Foundation, which is at identity.foundation. That will give you access to all of the community members and all the companies that are part of this movement, right? Building standards, open source software around it, implementations of it, et cetera. We are one member in that community. Microsoft's implementation of this stack is available at aka.ms/DID preview. We'll include that in the show notes if appropriate. Those are the two key resources I would start with. And the third one is our blog site, which is accessible through that website as well. But it will give you a primer on how to get started. It has code samples on it. It has how-to guides on it. There is an overview video. There's a video for marketing. There's a video for deep technical people. The service is today in preview. Pretty soon we're going to open it to public preview. So it is limited in preview right now because we are, again, validating these ideas and implementation. Want to make sure we are doing well by security and compliance, because if you're going to attempt to solve such a critical piece, we need to make sure we get it right. So our hope is by early next year, we'll announce a public preview of it, at which point anyone in the listening community can go and kick the tires directly. Our hope is by summer, it will be more generally available.
Great. Now, looking forward to it. Cool. Well, Kale, Cynthia, any last questions for Ankur?
No, this has been awesome. Thanks for coming
really
on.
Really illuminating.
This was fun. Thank you for joining. I loved your energy. I appreciate the invite to come chat with you guys. Let me know if you have any other questions. Love to keep up.
We'll have you back, you know, when you guys go GA at some point. And I mean, you have all these cool uses now that are right. We'll have you back at that point. So, no, great. Thank you very much, Ankur.
Thank you. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.